Magical artifacts. Petra and Oscar made their way through the farmer's market section of the night market. I mean, you can get some truly wild things here, but we're on a mission, she said, as she hurried him past a display of floating apples, and emerged from a row of booths to find themselves in an open space just left of the five main tents. Petra named each of them as she pointed, starting with the four smaller ones and ending with the biggest. Agriculture, horticulture, magical artifacts, arts and textiles, and of course, the stage. The stage? Oscar asked. There's one show a night. It starts at 11. You have to get your tickets early. See the line? She pointed to where there were already a vast line of people forming, and it was only getting longer by the second. They're all waiting for tickets. Should we get tickets? We have them already, she said, for tomorrow night, perks of being friends with a friend of Innes's. How did Nico and Innes know each other? Oscar asked as Petra took his arm and steered him to the magical artifacts tent. I tried to ask him, but he changed the subject. Right, of course he did. Because you're young and impressionable, and because Bilius asked him not to tell you. She looked over at him and winked. Why would my father ask Nico not to tell me something? I don't know. Parents are weird, she said. Sometimes they think they have to protect their kids from the truth. I cannot explain it. Oz. So, what is the truth? Will you tell me? Sure, because your dad didn't make me promise anything. And I'm nothing if not a bad influence. Nico and Innes used to be runners together. Runners? Smugglers, bootleggers, moon cursers, moonshiners, moon... They were thieves? Oscar squealed. Thieves is not a word I'd use to describe them. A thief is someone who picks a wallet out of your back pocket, which reminds me, pay attention to your wallet. There are a lot of people about. You don't have to worry about Farsalthians, but folks come from all around Terra to visit the night market, you know. The good and the bad. Oscar patted his pocket instinctively, relieved to feel that the wallet was still there. He buttoned his pocket and struggled to keep up with Petra, who had much longer legs than he did. Smugglers? Really? Oscar said. A million years ago, Petra said. And they prefer runners. There's a negative connotation to smugglers that isn't quite fair. They weren't stealing from other people. They were taking back what rightfully belonged to those people, and were redistributing the wealth. That it's the government who steals, Oscar, who smuggles. And don't you forget it. They'd almost reached the entrance of the magical artifact's tent. Oh, and most of the stuff they were running was purchased legally. It just wasn't strictly legal to run it. How could something be legal to buy but not legal to run? Oscar asked. It's all politics, Petra said. Different countries have different import laws. Different cities, even. Like Rowan. You can't import umbrellas to Rowan. Do you know that? Oscar did know that, of course. He nodded. Do you know why? Petra pressed. She stopped just outside the entrance of the tent and turned to face him. Oscar shook his head. It's because of Braun Industries, Petra said. They have endless money. When they started making umbrellas, they paid off the politicians of Commerce City. They made it illegal to import umbrellas into the city. Then they systematically started choking out every umbrella maker in the city. And now they're just... She trailed off, waiting for him to catch up. My dad... Oscar said. Your dad, she agreed. Wow. Yeah, they're not good people, Oz. And your dad is the only one they haven't managed to crush into oblivion. Why is that? Simple, she said, smiling. He makes really good umbrellas. And He's just one tiny fish in the sea. He doesn't present much competition. They probably figure it would take more effort to really squash him than it would take to just leave him alone at this point. Petra looked around, then took a step closer to Oscar. Don't you think it's weird that the weather here got really bad as soon as Bronn started making umbrellas? Do you know what they made before they made umbrellas? Tires, Oscar said. Yep. And before that? Jump ropes, I think. And before that? I don't know. A long list of things. Nothing ever really took off. And then they switched to umbrellas and bam! She snapped her fingers about 2 inches from Oscar's face. Are you saying... I'm saying it's weird, Petra replied. That's all. All right. Let's go find me an ospectroscope. And don't tell your father I told you any of this. Got it? Or Nico. Or Innes. Actually, don't tell anyone. Especially not Sage. Why especially not Sage? Just trust me, okay? Okay. Oscar promised, and he didn't have even a second to process everything she had just told him. Why couldn't he tell Sage? Before Petra grabbed him by the hand and pulled him through the small mob of people currently entering the magical artifact's tent, Oscar's eyes widened, and he almost forgot to even breathe. He was thankful for Petra still kept hold of his hand. She led them away from the entrance and off to the side where there were fewer people, and Oscar had a second to take it all in. The inside of the tent was a rich, dark amethyst color, and the same fairy lights were strung along the ceiling, zigzagging across the entire space. At the top of the tent was an enormous chandelier. It was made up of what looked like hundreds of clear glass bubbles, all crowded around each other and piled on top of each other, like if you took a spoon and scooped off a layer of bubbles from the bubble bath. Each bubble burned a different color, blues and purples and silvers and golds and yellows and lavenders and pinks and greens. Petra followed his gaze and beamed. Now that would look incredible through an ospectroscope, she said. See the clear bubbles throughout the chandelier? Those aren't clear at all. Those are colors the human eyes can't see. While far Southians can probably see them, they have those magical elf eyes. She continued her excited stream of consciousness babble, but Oscar barely heard her. There were just too much to see. It was like if you smashed together a massive magic shop. He'd been to one in Commerce City, and the biggest bookstore you've ever seen. One side of the tent is covered in bookcases from the floor to the ceiling, and swirled everything together in a mechanics workshop, a natural history museum, and a toy store. There were booths set up everywhere, and each of them was like its own separate shop. Some of these even had roofs and doors and little windows you could peek through. The floor was cobblestoned in places and brick in other places and packed in dirt in other places. Not for the first time, Oscar wondered how all of this was possible. Even if the Farselthians had magic, how could they possibly manage all this? It was unlike anything he had ever seen. Oz, Petra said, and Oscar had the impression it wasn't the first time she said his name. He smiled sheepishly and looked at her. Sorry. It's a lot, I know. It's so cool. I mean, it's an actual cottage. He pointed to the stone building just 20 or 30 feet in front of them. It had a thatched roof and rounded door and a chimney with smoke coming out of it. Yeah, we should definitely go in there, Petra agreed. She sells those candles with flames that burn different colors. Oh, those would be amazing with an ospectroscope. Let's get your ospectra thingy first, Oscar said, laughing, knowing how excited she was. We can look around after that. Petra gave a little squeal, and although she wasn't holding his hand anymore, made sure to look back every few feet so as to not lose Oscar in the crowd. Oscar tried to look around him. There was just too much to see, and he didn't want to lose Petra either. He focused on keeping up with her, and after a few minutes of walking, she paused in front of a nondescript folding table with an impossibly old Farsalthian sitting in a chair behind it. She had a pale, paper-thin skin covered in wrinkles, and she wore a pair of eyeglasses with the tiniest lenses Oscar had ever seen. The table in front of her was filled with what Oscar assumed were auspectroscopes. They had one arm that hooked over your ear, like a regular pair of eyeglasses, but the second arm was designed to fit over your head, and they only had one lens to fit over the right eye. To be honest, they were kind of boring looking. 200 skiffs, the Farsalthian announced tiredly, but I like your hair, so 190 for you. All the auspectroscopes looked exactly the same, with not so much as a different screw or color among them. But still, Petra took her time choosing. She picked up each one, examining it carefully, turning it over in her hands, and finally put one on her head. Wordlessly, she took her money out of her flat, small purse Oscar hadn't even noticed before, handed it to the Farsalthian, and whispered, "Thank you." "Enjoy the rest of the night market," the Farsalthian replied, bowing her head in farewell. Petra wandered away, apparently forgetting all about Oscar as she looked through her new auspectroscope. Oscar followed her silently smirking, happy that she was happy. And then he saw a small shop made of red brick with two small windows, the glass marked by air pockets through which he could see wood carvings. The shop was filled with wood carvings. He whirled around to tell Petra to wait, but she was already gone, swallowed up by the crowd in the few seconds Oscar had taken his eyes off her. He knew he should try to find her, but the pull of the shop was too much to ignore, and before he could talk himself out of it, he opened the door and slipped inside. The interior of the shop was dark, lit only by a few taper candle sets into nooks on the wall. There were two wooden tables, and each of these were completely filled with wooden carvings. Oscar took a deep breath. It smelled like his bedroom, like his favorite smell in the entire world, the smell of sawdust. But this wood was something he'd never seen before. He bent down to examine one of the carvings more closely. The wood was dark, practically black, with almost no grain in it. The carving was of a curled-up sleeping cat. Its tail was tucked under its chin, and its paws were hidden underneath its body. Its fur was carved so expertly that it seemed like each hair was a separate individual knife stroke. As Oscar watched, one of the ears twitched in its sleep, and the gentle rise and fall of its chest became more notable. Wait, one of the ears twitched. The rise and fall of the chest? The cat was breathing. Oscar took an awkward step backwards, still hunched over, and immediately tripped, landing hard on his butt on the wood floor. In the shadows at the back of the shop, someone laughed amicably. A Farsalthian. Oscar hadn't seen her before, but she moved into one of the circles of light now. She had light brown skin and warm red hair and sharp green eyes. Her face was friendly, and she had one beauty mark under her left eye. She was beautiful, just like all Farsalthians he had seen so far, and Oscar suddenly felt self-conscious, sitting on his bum in the middle of her shop. He quickly scrambled to his feet. Sorry, he mumbled. It can be a bit of a shock, she said. They do move a little. Which was exactly when Oscar noticed that all of the wooden carvings, not just the cat, were moving. They weren't just animals. There was a 1 foot tall wooden ship that perpetually rocked back and forth as if sailing along the high seas. There was a windmill with its 4 wooden sails spinning slowly clockwise. And there was a tree, the tallest carving there, 3 feet high, with many branches and individual leaves. It swayed gently in an invisible breeze. All of the carvings were done in the same dark, almost black wood. It was as smooth as blown glass, and Oscar wished desperately to touch it, but he thought that would probably be rude. "Are they enchanted?" he asked. "No," the Farsalthian replied. "Not by any spell or charm. It's the wood itself. It's a monk wood. It grows in the swamps of Monkland. It drinks the magical waters around it and becomes infused with its magic. Just a little bit infused, though. The cat will sleep forever, although occasionally it will twitch an ear or breathe or peek open one eye. The ship will rock back and forth, but never set sail." "Monkwood," Oscar repeated. He had never heard of it. "Please," the Farsalthian said, gesturing the table, "feel free." Oscar stepped forward again and picked up the sleeping cat. The wood felt warm underneath his hand, and he could feel the low purr of the cat's breathing, the gentle thrumming of the small body. "And you're sure it's not alive?" the Farsalthian guessed. "I assure you, the monkwood takes on certain characteristics of the carving, but the carving is still just wood." "The grain is so smooth," Oscar noted, "and the weight, it's so much heavier than it looks." The Farsalthian raised an eyebrow. "Are you familiar with wood then?" "Sort of," Oscar admitted. "I carve a little." "How lovely," she replied. "In that case, I would like to offer you a gift." "Oh no," Oscar said, setting the cat back on the table. "I couldn't." "I will give you 2 gifts," she amended. "The first is a bit of advice. Never refuse a gift offered by a Farsalthian." She smiled, and Oscar felt his cheeks flush with warmth. "The second is this." And she turned around for a moment, then faced Oscar again with a small block of wood in her hand. An uncarved piece of monk wood. From one carver to another, she handed him the block of wood. It was about 2 inches by 4 inches, and it was deliciously solid and warm in his hands. "Thank you," he said, "truly." "You are very welcome," she said. "Come back and see me one day. I'd love to know what you find in that wood." Oscar promised that he would. Then he slipped the block of wood into his pocket and left the shop. The magical artifacts tent was much more crowded now, and he gave up any hope of finding Petra. But it was probably about time to head to the Ferris wheel anyway. So he made his way back to the entrance of the tent, trying not to get distracted by everything there was to see. He felt like he just barely scratched the surface of the tent, and he wanted to come straight back after he rode the Ferris wheel with Sage. She would love it here. He wondered what she'd been doing so far, and then he remembered what Petra had said. "Actually, don't tell anyone, especially not Sage." It was just kind of weird, wasn't it, that Petra had singled Sage out? Well, she'd also mentioned Bilius, Nico, and Innes, so maybe it wasn't so weird after all. She probably knew that Oscar told Sage everything, and that was her way of covering all her bases. Although, it didn't feel like that, did it? Pursuit. Oscar slipped out of the magical artifacts tent, took a second to get his bearings, and turned towards the direction of the Ferris wheel. There were so many more people around now, and he kept patting his pockets nervously, making sure that both the wallet and the block of monkwood were safe. When he passed around the front of the largest tent, he noticed it had an enormous clock over the entranceway, which was currently closed. This was the clock he had seen in the night market's flyers. It was 5 minutes till 10. He picked up the pace. The area of the immediate right of the five main tents was filled with rows and rows of food stalls and food trucks and food tents, and Oscar felt his stomach turn over eagerly as he smelt all the rich, enticing options. But still, he forced himself to ignore all of them because he didn't want to keep Sage waiting. Past the food area, the ride area began. The Ferris wheel sat in the center of all the other rides, and Oscar dutifully planted himself in front of it after scanning the area, determining that Sage wasn't already there. All around him were the shouts and squeals and happy voices of the market goers. Aside from the Ferris wheel, there was a ride that lifted you into the air and spun you around at a million miles an hour. No, thank you, thought Oscar. A ride that was shaped like a giant sailing ship that rocked back and forth with giant heaves, also no. And an area for younger children that included a swing ride that lifted you gently into the air and swung you around. A long, dragon-shaped roller coaster that breathed real fire, and a beautiful merry-go-round, each animal so realistic, they almost looked alive. Oscar waited for about 5 or 10 minutes, getting more impatient by the second. But the market was huge, and if Sage had lost track of time, it would take her quite a while to reach him. So he continued to wait. And finally, when he couldn't ignore the sweet smells of the food area anymore, he backtracked to find himself something to eat. He settled for a thick round of fried dough, dusting it with plenty of powdered sugar. He sunk his teeth into the hot bread and actually moaned it was so good. He walked slowly back towards the Ferris wheel, taking small bites of dough, trying to savor it as long as possible. He had 48 shifts left, and he buttoned them carefully back into his pocket. He ate exactly half of the dough, intending to save the rest of it for Sage. But after another 5 minutes or so, he decided to eat just half of that. And 5 minutes after that, he ate the rest of it, reasoning that he didn't know if Sage would be hungry anyway. And where was Sage, he thought. Somewhat annoyed now that the food was gone, he found a trash can and wiped powdered sugar off his hands and face, then dropped his plate and napkin into the barrel. Back in front of the Ferris wheel, he stopped an older woman and asked her what time it was. 10:30. There was only an hour and a half left of the first night of the market, and Sage was still nowhere to be found. He could leave and do something else, but what if she arrived in a few minutes? Then again, she was pretty late now. Maybe she'd gotten busy and couldn't get away from her family, and Oscar was waiting for nothing. He brushed some leftover powder from his shirt and decided to wait another 5 minutes when something knocked into his shoulder, hard. He whirled around to see Gregory Fairmountain and Tim Clint. His stomach flipped over uncomfortably, and he took a step backwards, away from the bullies. "Oscar, Oscar, Oscar," Gregory said in an annoying, sing-songing voice. "What a fun surprise seeing you here." "I was just leaving," Oscar said. "My dad's waiting for me right over there. I have to go." "Now that's a lie, isn't it?" Tim said. "We've been watching you for a few minutes. We think you're here all alone." "I'm not," Oscar insisted. "So you better leave." "I actually don't want to leave," Gregory said, his sing-songy voice gone and his words full of nothing but deep anger. "What about you, Tim?" "Oh, I don't think I want to leave either," Tim said. "This seems like the perfect place to have a little chat. No annoying cousins here to save the day. No Principal Gunderson. No one except a market full of people who couldn't care less about one little scumbag getting his face bashed in." Oscar took another step back. "I'm telling you," he said, "my dad's right over there. He's just getting a coffee, and when he gets back..." I thought he was waiting for you to go back to him, Gregory said. Getting your story confused, are you? Well, how about this? How about we go find him together, the three of us? And if he's here, Tim and I will say hi and go on our way. And if he's not there, we'll bash your face in, Tim finished happily. All right, Oscar said, his heart beating faster now, his palms feeling a little sweaty. Sounds great. Follow me. Gregory and Tim kept a close trail on Oscar as he led them over to the food area. He could see a wooden stall with a neon blue light on the side that said coffee. He walked slowly, feeling all the muscles in his body tense up. Standing at the side of the stall, adding creamer to his coffee, was a man with his back to them. Oscar pointed, hoping they wouldn't notice his hand shaking, and said, "See? There he is." He looked over his shoulder and saw Gregory and Tim exchange a wary look. As soon as their eyes were off him, Oscar started running. He heard Gregory and Tim shout behind him as he darted around the side of the coffee stall, then looped around and ran between a candy apple place and a roasted nut stand. He kept making erratic turns, knowing that Gregory and Tim were both faster than he was, not daring to look behind him as he pumped his arms faster and faster. In just a minute, he shot out from the edge of the food area, and his heart sank when he saw how out in the open he was. He spent a split second deciding whether to run for the nearest tent, agriculture, but in the end, he decided to try to make it to the other side, back to his dad and Nico and Innes, who could protect him. He heard more shouting behind him, but he didn't stop to look. He simply willed his legs to move faster, forcing himself to keep running, even as a painful stitch developed in his side. He passed the stage tent, then rounded the magical artifacts tent and kept going. His lungs were burning now. His vision was going a little wonky, and he finally chanced the quickest look behind him and saw how close they were, their faces twisted into expressions of pure rage. Nico and Innes' stand was too far away. He'd never make it. He veered right towards the back of the market and broke into a line of tents he hadn't yet been to. It seemed darker back here, as if the fairy lights of the market couldn't quite reach the densely crowded grounds. The aisles were thinner here, too, and Oscar had to pivot quickly and avoid running someone over. "Sorry," he called, still running. A moment later, he heard a crash and a chorus of shouting from behind him. He turned to see a jumble of bodies on the ground. Gregory and Tim had just run into a group of people. Smirking, Oscar turned back around, just in time to smash face first into someone or something. And then everything went black. Blanderwheel, Part 3. And then everything went black. His ears roared with sound. Was he dead? No. You probably couldn't hear things if you were dead. And he could feel things, too. His cheeks and his chest and hips were pressed against something hard. The ground! He had fallen to the ground. Ouch! The wind was violent, whipping his hair around his face. He struggled to open his eyes, to push himself up. He needed to find Sage. He needed to keep going. If he stayed out here in the storm for much longer, well, then he might really die. The Teller. But at least for now, he was definitely not dead. And he was still at the night market. Oscar opened his eyes to darkness. He moaned and grabbed for his head, but he didn't seem to have complete control of his body, because he ended up smacking himself in the nose instead. He tried to sit up, but the pair of gentle, though firm, hands held him down. Gradually, his eyes adjusted to the dim light, and he could just make out the inside of a bare tent. He was lying on a rug that felt scratchy on the back of his arms. Next to him was a small table with two chairs, and on the table was a lone candle and some sort of crystal globe. He closed his eyes again. His head was throbbing. "Are they?" He tried to talk, but his tongue wasn't quite working yet. The words were thick in his mouth. "They won't find you here," said the voice, and Oscar was surprised to find that it sounded like a girl. He tried to sit up again, and this time his hands let him, or the hands let him, and he caught a glimpse of the person they were attached to, of their face, and it was a girl, about his age, dressed in the robes of a Farsouthian, her blonde hair braided in two plaits, her pale white face dotted with freckles. "I'm being chased," Oscar said dully, and he pointed to the flap of the tent, which was open just an inch or so, enough to see a sliver of the night sky outside it. "They're gone," the girl said calmly. "They caused a bit of a ruckus, and they've been removed."
"Removed?"
"Escorted off the grounds. I dragged you in here so they wouldn't see you." "My face feels..."
"You ran into a pole," she said, her voice sympathetic.
"But I put some alder cream on you. You won't bruise." Oscar felt his face again. It did feel a bit sticky and warm. "Ow," he said. The girl smiled. "Yeah, face first into a pole will do that." Oscar smiled back. It hurt. "I'm Oscar," he said. "Thank you. Those guys are, well, I'm just glad they didn't catch me."
"Eunice."
"And you're welcome. Why were they chasing you?"
"We go to school together. They're just jerks."
She nodded. "Yeah, I picked up on that." Oscar looked around the tent again. "What part of the night market is this?" She brightened.
"Oh, welcome. This is the others."
"The others?" "Everything that can't be neatly categorized. The guy next door can make your hair any color in the rainbow. Lady over there can turn all your teeth into wood."
"But why would you want..."
"I have absolutely no idea," Eunice said, laughing. "And what about you?" Oscar said. "What do you do?"
"I'm a teller."
"A teller." It sounded familiar, tugging at the edges of Oscar's memory, but his head still hurt, and it was difficult to find the information he knew was in there. Eunice hopped to her feet and held her hand out to Oscar, then helped him up. She was surprisingly strong for someone about 3 inches shorter than Oscar himself.
"I don't think I know what that is," Oscar said apologetically.
"I can see futures," she said, "but my powers are really specific. It's not like palm reading or anything. I can't just do it to anyone. I have to have some kind of connection to them. Some kind of, well, let's just say that business has been slow. Not a lot of people want a reading from me because I can't really guarantee beforehand if I'll see anything. But I offer a partial refund if that happens. I just can't give you your time back, you know? People get really protective of their time.
I guess that makes sense.
Oh, wait, I'm rambling, aren't I? Sorry."
"I want a reading from you," Oscar said at once. It was the least he could do, he thought. She had saved him from Gregory and Tim, even if she hadn't managed to save him before he'd run into the pole.
"Really?" she said, looking so hopeful that Oscar couldn't help but smile.
"Yeah, absolutely. How much?"
"Oh, I couldn't charge you," she said quickly. "It wouldn't be right with all your recent facial injuries." Oscar touched his hand to his face, feeling the sticky warmth of the alder cream.
"Wait, what did she mean, all the recent facial injuries?" His black eye had mostly faded. He didn't even think it was noticeable anymore.
"How did you..."
"So what do you say?" she interrupted, her eyes widening.
"Should we do it?"
Was she trying to change the subject?
No, he was just being paranoid. She was perfectly nice, and Oscar had just had his skull knocked pretty hard. He wasn't thinking straight.
"Can't I give you something?" he asked.
"Nah, it'll be fun." She gestured to the small table
and they took seats on opposite sides of it. The crystal globe was between them. The shadows in the tent seemed to darken as Eunice mentioned, Eunice motioned for Oscar's hands. She gently arranged his palms so they were both flat on the table. Then she sat back, regarded him with an almost sad expression on her face, and closed her eyes. He realized, after about two very long, very quiet minutes, what she meant about people getting protective of their time. It was hard to sit still. It was hard not to fidget, not to remove his palms from the table, not to cross his legs or get up and pace around the room. Eunice, for her part, sat perfectly motionless. She might have been a statue. It was hard to look at her face. It was so frozen. Oscar closed his eyes for a while, then opened them again, then closed them, then counted to 100, then opened them again, and jumped an inch off the chair when he found Eunice was staring at him, her eyes wide and bright. "This is going to be easy," she said. "Easy? Your task." "My task?" "She didn't meet you tonight." "Because she's ashamed," Eunice said. Her eyes had a vague, faraway look in them, like she wasn't seeing Oscar, really, but instead seeing past him. Her words sent a chill through his body. She was clearly talking about Sage. "But none of this is her fault," Eunice continued. "You have to remember that, okay? Promise me."
"I promise?"
"Right. Here's what I can see. Your birthday is coming up, right? 2 weeks?"
"That's right," Oscar said.
"She'll invite you over to spend the night. She'll apologize for not meeting you in front of the Ferris wheel. You will go. There will be a locked door. You must open it."
"You want me to break into a room in my best friend's new house?"
"I'm just telling you what I see. And I see a lot. Your path, your future. It is intertwined with the lives and the futures of the people of Rowan." She paused, then nodded. "That's it."
"That's it?"
"That's what I see. You see my entire future somehow connected to the future of everyone in Rowan, and because of this, I have to break into a locked room in my best friend's house," Oscar said, his voice strangely emotionless. Eunice nodded enthusiastically. "Yes, that's exactly it. Oh, and there's one more thing."
"One more thing?"
"All of this has to do with the rain."
"The rain?"
"The rain, Oscar," Eunice said, leaning forward. "Got it?"
"I guess."
"Good." She looked like she was about to say more, but at that moment, someone entered the tent. It was a boy about Petra's age, maybe in his early 20s. He was tall, and he also wore a robe of the Farsouthians. There was something vaguely familiar about him, but he was a spitting image of Eunice. But it must have been that.
"This is my brother," Eunice said. "Garner."
Garner nodded at Oscar, but seemed hesitant to stick around for any amount of time. He slipped out the back opening of the tent that Oscar hadn't noticed before and was gone. "He's, shy," Eunice said, and flashed a smile so suspicious that Oscar had to laugh. The tension in the tent seemed to break at that, and somewhere far off, Oscar heard a clock strike 11.
"I'd better get going," he said. "Thank you."
"Thanks again." "Thank you," Eunice said. "You're my first customer in the whole night market. I don't know if you can technically call me a customer, since you didn't let me pay," he pointed out.
"Eh, details," she said with a wave of her hand.
"But I'll spread the word, and I'll come back and see you tomorrow."
"Sure," she said, wiggling slightly in her chair, suddenly uncomfortable.
"That sounds great." "Thanks again, Eunice," he said, standing up. He waved clumsily at her as he stepped out of the tent, back into the chaotic energy of the night market.
and he did go back to see her the next night, or at least he tried to. But he couldn't seem to recreate the path of his late-night chase. He couldn't retrace his steps from the Ferris wheel to Eunice's tent. And when he stopped to ask someone, a tall, Farsalthian woman in robes that fell down to her ankles, she only smiled at him curiously, tilting her head as she asked, "The others? I've never heard of this section of the night market. I'm sorry about that, son, but you must be mistaken."